Whoa, they fired John Gruden. Holy shit. Wow. That's breaking news.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So John Gruden's like a big time football coach. He won Super Bowl with the Buccaneers in like the early 2000s. And then he went into like the media part of it and then was given some like exorbitant contract to come back to the NFL and coach the Raiders. And he's been the coach for a few years and they're starting to play pretty well. And then some emails surfaced of him saying some pretty first awful racist stuff about a black administrator in the league. And then I guess apparently he another email came out where he was being pretty disgusting with anti-gay language, and it just came out that they fired him. That was quick.
Canceled.
That was a quick and pointed response to someone as high profile as him. I'm actually kind of glad to see such a swift move so I don't have to hear about this bullshit for like the next, you know?
Yeah.
Just get the fucking asshole out of here. I don't know. You know, I agree with second chances and things like that, but like, I'm sorry, if you're like 40, 50 year old man or woman who's writing emails to like other high level people saying this shit at that age, that's just the person you are, right?
You're a douche. You're a douchebag.
Like, you're just a fucking douchebag. Yeah. Like you can't apologize for that. I was like, oh, I'm a 55 year old man who used this language and now I'm like, should have fucking known better by now. So, yeah.
And there's good types rinse. Of, you know, there's types of douchebag that are tolerated as successful people. You can be an old grouch and an asshole and still keep your job. But yeah, if you're just going to be a hateful, racist fucking.
Like Bill Belichick. You don't want to go have a beer with Bill Belichick.
Right.
Sounds terrible. But you know, keep your neck clean enough where, yeah, you can just be an asshole. Same in music, right? Like, how many times have you seen someone who's just, you know, socially semi-awful or business-wise semi-awful who kind of just get by on sheer talent, you know? Like, people will, you know, buckle and bend to those people and their will if they're, if they got the hits, if they come in with the songs, the hit songs.
It's true.
Well, it was nice to have Chris McLean on the program.
What? This is one of those shows where you can just kind of like listen to his voice and get into like a vibe.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't.
Maybe that's why I don't talk so much in this one.
Yeah. No, Chris is like, like I said, I think I said it towards the end when Chris was telling me he had imposter complex, you know, like I've always found his views on things, where he's from, the way he shaped his life. It's always been really unique and interesting. And he's got a ton of charisma and personality. I was like hoping to talk to him. So, you know, we didn't get into it too much in the interview. But for a background on how, you know, close I am with Chris and his band, you know, me and my best friend, Matt Levitin, did shows at the Manville Elks Lodge in New Jersey. And that was like kind of our spot. Matt had lived in South Carolina prior to coming up and had known about Stretch Armstrong, you know, way before most people in New Jersey did. We literally might've been the first two New Jersey Stretch Armstrong fans. And we started booking them at Manville and they would come up. And since they're Matt's buddies, like we mentioned in there, they, you know, we'd stay at his apartment. We'd help him out. We'd always go to the Time to Eat Diner for golden brown pancakes after the gigs. You know, it was a lot of fun. And we had a nice relationship. And Matt and I were just giant mega fans of the band. We just thought they were awesome, too. You know, so that helped. And then, you know, when I was, you know, 17 going on 18 and Matt was 20 or 21, he moved back down to South Carolina. He was living with these guys, you know, traveling with the Stretch guys. And then that November 98, Matt and one of the members of Stretch and some other people got in a very serious car accident coming back from a show. And, you know, my best friend Matt was paralyzed. And it was like an extremely serious situation that like all of us were super close to. You know, Matt almost died. And he's still, you know, living today as quadriplegic. But still, you know, one of my best friends and still really close to Chris and Dave and those guys from South Carolina. So, you know, even on the Stretch Armstrong record, Rituals of Life, you know, there's a song about Matt on there. And so there's always just been this, you know, me and Stretch Armstrong have a unifying tie for the rest of my life.
Been through some shit.
Yeah, we've been through some shit for sure, for sure. But that being, you know, a lot of people have come and gone in that situation, you know, like I've seen a lot of people come into Matt's world, leave Matt's world, people who were close to it when it first happened. But, you know, when other people, you know, when your own life starts taking over, you lose focus of other people. And, you know, those guys have consistently been there and been in Matt's life and staying around and just good fucking people, you know, like you can tell when people are good, when you're actually put through the ringer and they have a hard decision to make. And
right.
That's when you can really tell the gumption of people and what their will is. And, you know, Chris has always been right in the up and up with that. So sweet. I got nothing but love for him as an individual. And then Stretch is just always such a great band. Like, you know, always kept it perfectly good, solid melodic hardcore, like one of the better live bands you could see. Always a great vibe, great to be around. So cool that they reunited for Furnace Fest and kind of back on the map. I hope they can convince those boys to do a little more.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Had a blast talking with Chris. That's the bummer background of it. The interview is much more fun than that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Anything else, Brad, to add?
I'd say let's listen to it.
All right.
Play listen the train. Listen to the soothing voice, Chris.
I know. melodious. Melodious southern voice. He should be the next like KFC spokesperson. Let's get into it. It's going on.
Got to go to bed soon. Three questions.
It's a great thing you got in-house tech support there.
Yeah, I got a 15-year-old. That's right. My 20-year-old's at college. My 15-year-old's here. It's good, man.
Brilliant.
Does that sort of thing come up often where they're your conduit to the modern technology and things of this nature?
Yeah, I'm really bad. I was talking to someone about this the other day. Like, I've never ordered anything on Amazon before.
What?
And people are just like, what? You're no way. I'm like, dude, I'm totally serious. Just don't.
That is impressive.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. It's probably sad, but I just haven't.
I'm impressed.
I don't know that I would know how. My wife put the app on my phone. So, you know, and then I was like, can you show me how to take the app off the phone?
I mean, but you gotta, I'd assume you have to incorporate some level of technology just for your work, right?
Yeah, I can turn my computer on, answer emails. Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah, you're still no, just on email level.
Yeah, I'm an email whiz, but anything beyond that's a lot of trouble.
You've had to do some Zooms the last year and a half.
A lot of Zooms. And that was
Zooms.
Yeah, now we do these Teams calls. So it was like I was getting comfortable with Zoom, and then we switched over to Microsoft Teams calls. Yeah.
Someone invited me to that shit last night, and I went to join Zoom. And there was no video.
You can turn your camera off or not, but no, I'm good with that. I don't mind that. And it was kind of nice during the pandemic, you know, when you weren't seeing anybody. I thought it was cool just to see everybody, say what up.
So what was, you know, speaking of which, when it first started slowing down, what was that like for you? I mean, what were you working on?
Moving shows to 22 or the end of this year. It was like a puzzle piece, man, just moving them around. I was walking my dog about 9 times a day. Was running, checking emails, you know, getting my house and my yard squared away.
Yeah, because even though, I mean, you're not touring with Stretch, I mean, you do quite a bit of traveling, too, involved with work, right?
I work for AAG, so I cover the Carolinas, part of Georgia, and, you know, part of Alabama is our territory. You know, I'm traveling, certainly not like a band dude.
Not accustomed to sitting at home all day.
No, heck no. I think it drives my wife crazy if I'm home for too long. That's the magic of the 24-year marriage.
Right.
Yeah, a little time at home, a little time away, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 24 years.
Long time, man. Long
next
time.
Year going for the big 2-5.
No, we'll see. Too early to tell. You never know.
See, that's how it lasted so long. You got to keep it tenuous, right? Keep them on their toes all the time.
Don't want to jinx it. Yeah, don't want to jinx it. No, it's great, man. She's the best.
So your most of your like kind of coping stuff through the last year and a half has been kind of exercise based, just making sure that you get yourself moving and
and I, you know what, I there was a part of me, and this was, you know, several months ago, we were talking, and I'm fully aware a lot of people had it really, really bad during the pandemic, and so I don't want to come off as, you know, being out of touch with that. But like from my situation, I mean, you know, early on, my daughter was home from college. So that was like a nice treat. My boy was home doing school here. My wife was teaching from home.
Right.
So we were all four together. We did a lot of cooking, a lot of Netflix, a lot of going outside. And it's, you know, I sound like a jerk for saying that, man, but the pandemic for us was like, it was really pretty good, man. You know, I was still employed, right? So again, maybe we edit this out later, but
No. Actually, you're kind of spinning. You're not the first person who's mentioned this in the last year and a half of doing these since COVID. I think a lot of people found, you know, just a lot of value in this simple fact of almost just having a pause button. You know, the idea that you have this strange chance to kind of step back from your life and reflect on things, which, like, not given that circumstance, just wouldn't happen, you know?
Absolutely. And with no shows, it was like I didn't have to worry about my phone ringing all the time or something popping off. So, like, once I settled into that mode of, okay, it's going to be like this for a little while, it was really pretty good. There was someone said that like they missed the pandemic phase when the Tiger King was like big and funny, because it was like, this pandemic thing, you know, we'll be done with this in a couple of weeks. Right, Tiger King's fun.
We got Tiger King. Yeah. Oh my God. I totally forgot about that. That was like
that was
first couple of weeks of pandemic thing. Yeah.
This is great, man. We'll order some food. We'll watch this crazy show and like we'll be back to work in a couple of weeks.
Exactly.
And then it was just like, dang, you know, 14 months, whatever.
Yeah.
So
then we're a year later, we realized Tiger King was a piece of shit the whole time.
Terrible.
We never even wanted it.
Yeah. And I think aren't they doing a sequel or something? Like,
I hope not. That thing really disturbed me. I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as other people.
Yeah. But see, that was like the top of the pandemic phase where it was like, this is kind of fun, exciting.
And
not so much.
Wow. I forgot about the Tiger King entrance.
No doubt.
That's hilarious.
So yeah, so you know that my experience was different than a lot of people, and so like I said, on the one hand, it was great being around my family and being here, but I realized that was not everyone's experience.
Of course. And now you're just cruising around. How you got full slate of shows?
Oh, like, dude, everything's so cruising. Yeah, it's so busy.
So
yeah,
are you literally like putting together shows now that were like what are most artists doing at this point? I mean, are most people really just like, all right, fuck it, like the tour from a year and a half ago, that record, we're done? Or are people really trying to still grind on those same shows?
Yeah, some people are. So like, wow. You know, our touring department, just the Stones just played off in Charlotte, right? And that thing had been pushed and pushed, but they played it out the end of September. And then, so there's that level of band that's like going out and doing outdoor stadium stuff. And then there's some artists that size that are like, you know what, we're going to punt the 22. We're going to place our bets on that. But then like in the club world, there's bands just still grinding it out, man. And so there's a lot of COVID protocol in place. You know, there's a lot of focus on not only keeping the artists safe, but also back of house and keeping all those folks safe, you know, and healthy so that we can, you know, keep doing this thing that's so important for so many people, man. A lot of bands still on the road.
How have you found like the state of South Carolina is in as far as COVID and their, you know, accessibility for communication? I'm sure the people at your company have kind of like a direct line or more of a direct line to some of this information, right?
The South Carolina approach and then the approach that we're getting from LA are could not be any more different.
right.
Yeah. But you spend enough time in the South, like this pandemic thing, is it even real? You know?
right.
What you doing wearing a mask, boy? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But no, South Carolina's approach has been real, real slow to respond, slow to jump on, let the parents decide if the kids should wear the mask. And it's been a bit of a frustration for sure.
Sure. And is that mostly business or personal or both?
Well, I think it's just in, you know, deeply layered within the fabric of the state dating back, you know, hundreds of years where, mm-hmm. Let us decide. You don't tell us what to do. Let the people decide. And then, you know, so you get all that in there too. And you can't tell me what to do. You know, so you got a lot of that going on too.
Yeah, kind of, I guess, really inherent in the fabric of not only the state, but the city, yes, isn't it?
100%. I mean, it's like, you don't tell us what to do. And that's, I mean, it's a big part of the state, man, you know, but it's a big part of the history too. So it certainly doesn't stop, you know, when something like this breaks out, you know.
See, that being said, you know, it's an interesting, I guess, philosophical thing. Cause if you took it from the outside, I would think that sort of mindset would lend itself to kind of like more subversive behavior. You know what I mean? Like, let's be punks. Let's be hardcore kids. Let's decide for ourselves. Let's like create our own path. And really, like, I can only pinpoint what you guys and self and maybe Hootie and the Blowfish is the only artists I ever knew from Columbia. So why is it disconnected? Why can't people take that energy into that realm instead of the other side?
Because it was the one side who was telling them to do it. And obviously the state has historically always been a red state.
Right.
So they're going to push back, you know, they're just going to push back because that team said it was this.
Sure.
If that team says it, then we certainly can't go along with that, you know? It's frustration, man.
Well, I mean, you were in high school there, what, in like the late 80s, right?
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, when you're, what year or like what age did you start getting into punk, hardcore, skating, like the whole kind of alternative world?
My brother took me to a Black Flag show in 1984.
Whoa.
And I was 12.
Wow. NSC?
Yeah, Rockefeller's.
No shit.
And so
Black flag in 84 in Colombia. That must have been a fucking
scene. It was scary, wow. Man. I mean, I was 12, so I was scared. And I don't say that just to so you think I'm old and super punk, but like there was a lot of that stuff coming through. He was into punk rock, so he would take me to that stuff. And like, you know, my parents are still married and they're like good parents, and but why they let us go to that stuff, I have no idea. No idea. I think about it now because my boy is the age that we were going to shows. They would go and drop us off. And then either come back and get us or we'd get a ride home. I don't know why they thought that was okay.
Well, I mean, I guess it panned out, right? Like,
maybe look at me now. Yeah, it was perfect. That's great.
Maybe they had an inkling that
maybe
if they didn't drop you off, it could have been worse. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. And you know, it was funny. My brother, you know, he was pretty bad into drugs and alcohol and all kinds of stuff. So we would get to the show, then he would find a way to, you know, get himself warmed up for the show, and I would be there just, you know, hanging because I didn't do that stuff. And then, you know, by the time the show would go, you know, he was, you know, well on his way.
Sure.
But we saw a lot of stuff that way, man. So it was early for me. I got into it pretty early, and it was all because of my middle. Well, I got two older brothers, but it was my middle older brother that got me into all this.
I think I met. We hung out last time. I was in Columbia, right?
Yeah. And he was in Columbia, and then also he would load your shows at the Music Farm. He would work it. Would work for me as a stagehand. Yes.
Yeah. Now, what did you like? What kind of kept you from going down the route of like with your brother? Like he must have been a big influence on you.
Real big influence in so many other ways.
Like what?
Yeah.
What gave you the wherewithal to kind of, you know, kind of stay away from that?
I don't know, man. You know, I people have asked me that a lot, but like I remember this distinctly. Like we would go to the record store, right? And he would buy like GBH, The Exploited, SNFU, like those were his albums. And then I was looking for like Youth of the Day, Uniform Choice, Unity, like all those straight edge bands. And then obviously like Minor Threat, you know, we got exposed to that early. And you know, I don't know, man, what he was doing was kind of like, it scared me a little bit. And then I found these other bands that were singing about not doing all that stuff. And then I was like, okay, like these guys are singing about stuff that I'm already not doing drugs and drinking and, you know, fooling around and stuff like that. And it just spoke to me, man. And it just seems, I'm 48 now. Right. So it just seems silly but that still plays in my head now. And yeah, so he was getting into the real super punk stuff and I was getting into, I mean, all the straight edge bands.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's funny how that pans out. Cause maybe it's just the, you know, the aggression and the speed of the music in
general
that brings people in, but then, you know, you kind of find your own messaging inside of it. Right. Cause I was never straight edge, but I was much more attracted to the stuff you were, you know, than, you know, in my area, like the real tough guy, kind of dangerous.
And there was a lot of that. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, sure. It was scary as fuck.
I mean, I remember we'd play those shows that you would do and like, we knew we were a long way from home, right? Not just geographically, but like, yo, we are a long way from home. Cause like, you know, I don't know what Manville's proximity is to the city, but it's relatively close, right?
About 30 minutes. Yeah.
So we would come up there and play with those bands. And we'd be like, yo, this is like rad, but also kind of scary. But we know Benny and Matt, and they're like 15 and 17. Right. So we're totally cool.
So you're good. You got back. Like that kid whose voice hasn't changed yet.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong? We're good. Yeah, we're good.
we took care of
it. Yeah, always. But I just remember feeling that way even then. Like, you know, just that. And we were always cool with a lot of those heavier bands and those New York, for whatever reason, we just, you know, gelled with those guys, man.
I feel like you all kind of had a, just socially, you all were really good, you know.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean,
we were always real grateful, man. Like gratitude was always our thing, and never really, it never left us that like we were doing something really cool with other people that we knew a lot of bands weren't getting a chance to do, or the travel we were getting. It was like a big deal, man. You know, it was a big deal. The travel back then, it was a big deal playing those shows, you know. And then look, you think about the first time we met you, and now here we are 20 years later.
More, yeah.
More than 20. It's pretty amazing, man. Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I think that first trip up there was like 1998.
Oh, probably even earlier, I think.
97? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe 97. Because I was still in high school when we first did a show with you all. It was probably 97.
97. I know it was the summer of 1997. Wow. So here we are. It's crazy, man.
I was 16 when I met you.
There you go.
So I want to go back though a little, because one of the fascinating things, you know, I'm completely fascinated with your childhood and the South in general.
Sure. We've
had this like, conversation. And you're like one of my singular windows into this because of the legitimate nature of your Southern upbringing.
Sure.
So like, you know, at the time, like I'm imagining 1984, Columbia, South Carolina, Black Flag.
Mm-hmm.
Like I read the Black Flag book. Yep. I know what was happening around this country at that time.
Yeah.
So what was the local reaction to stuff like that? Like what was going on?
Yeah. In his book, Get in the Van, he talks about one of the clubs that was before my time, you know, having problems when they came out of the venue. So at that time, you know, like rednecks always, like if, you know, and there's that Social Distortion album where it's the live album, and Mike Ness says, you know, when punk rock was dangerous, right? And you couldn't walk around town with mohawks, like you would get targeted.
Right.
And so my brother, who was like much more punk rock than me, because I kind of leaned into like the hardcore look a little bit more.
Right.
But yeah, man, you never know. Like, you know, we'd go to the mall or we'd like go up, you know, go downtown, and my parents would drop us off and we'd walk around, and, you know, and people would say stuff, or, you know, if somebody was wanting to pick on these two punk rock kids, like it wasn't like a lot of other major cities, but we were so small that people were just kind of floored by what they were seeing.
Right.
But as things moved on, like we had a pretty good punk scene. Like, there were a lot of shows, man. And there were a lot of bands. Like I saw a lot of really good bands that came through my town, like Verbal Assault, Youth of the Day, MDC, Gangrene. I mean, Green Day, you know, before the Dookie album came out. Like, Bad Religion, Pennywise, NoFX, Sick of It All, like, there was this 400 cap club, like Fugazi would play there. Like it was our spot. And I think back now, we had a lot of really good stuff coming through there, man. And obviously that was, you know, early 90s, but it was a lot of good stuff.
So it's like the size of the scene and like how vibrant it was almost left you not so isolated.
It got that way, right? Because it started off, it just felt like there was a few of us, and then we would go to shows and there were 400 of us, you know, or 300 or whatever. And then I started seeing kids that I'd never seen before. And I mean, I still have friends now that I met from going to shows, which I just, that's always like the coolest thing, man.
Right. Right. Was like, you know, were, I know it wasn't so much for you cause you know, you had a pretty good family and stuff, but was a lot of the people who were kind of into the scene at the time, was there sort of a counter reaction to Southern values, Christian values? Was that like part of the scene?
Yeah, it was. And like, I knew a lot of kids that would come to shows and stuff that like had terrible home lives. Right.
Right.
And they, a lot of drugs, a lot of stuff at home. And I just, that just wasn't my, you know, my parents, it was fine at home. Right. I mean, you know, typical parent teenager type stuff, but that just wasn't my reality.
Right.
But yeah, there were like, there's, you know, like a band like Anti-Schism, you know, they were a band, or and then they became like Initial State or something, but they were one of those early, they weren't a crust punk band, but it was, they were, you know, like anti-religion, anti-establishment. And it was like just really, really good punk rock, hardcore. that was, you know, coming out of Columbia, South Carolina. And I remember thinking like, this is definitely different than the way I was brought up or what they're singing about talk. And we were friends with those guys,
right?
But it was a definite change and different direction from, you know, the way I was brought up, which obviously punk rock is. But that was always the thing that I don't know if struggle is the right word, but I, you know, I had a good home life, and a lot of friends of mine and a lot of punks, hardcore kids I knew, they didn't. And so I think a lot of what they were doing was because of what was going on at home. I mean, I had a lot of support. There was always food in the refrigerator. We weren't wealthy, but there was food in the refrigerator. We had a skateboard ramp out back. I always had clean clothes. Yeah, it was just.
What kind of work were your parents in?
My dad was a banker and my mom worked at the hospital. So they were always gone, right? They were always gone. My brothers and I were by ourselves from about, if you know, during the summer, we were by ourselves from like 8 a.m. till like 5 p.m.
Okay.
Straight latchkey kids. Kindergarten, I rode my bike to school. My brother was in second grade. My older brother was probably in middle school by then, or he definitely was. So, I mean, we were latchkey kids. So we were always by ourselves.
Huh.
So we just were doing all kinds of things by ourselves. Yeah, good and bad, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so you started playing bass guitar first, right?
Yeah, So my brother and I, we bought a drum set and we bought a bass and a guitar because we figured, okay, we can try to do our own band. So we would play together. And then if we had people that would come over, well, we had a bass, we had a guitar, and we had a drum set. I can't play bass. You know, I can play bass as poorly as I play guitar, but I, you know, I could find the notes and figure it out. And then, you know, drums. And my boy plays drums now. He's a left-handed drummer, but he plays his open-handed on a right-hand kit.
So. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, you do.
Come on.
So, yeah, man. So, we got the instruments because we wanted to, like, you know, try to be a band, man.
Yeah.
Started to a band. That's where it came from.
It's so cool how, like, you and your bro really seemed like it was kind of in cahoots, sort of did everything together in those days. It's awesome.
We slept in the same room. Like, in each of us had a bedroom. My older brother had a bedroom downstairs, but we slept in the same room for like all through our teenage year. I tell you, when he started getting really bad into drugs is when he wanted his own spot. Yeah.
Oh, right.
And we were always together, man. I mean, like at the hip, we were always together.
I mean, I can imagine when you're really into drugs, you know, hey, the last thing you want around is your like chirpy, straight edge little brother, you know?
Yeah, chirpy. Annoying. That's me. Get out of here. Well, I'm going to tell mom. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was us. The minor threat right now.
No, that was it, man. Yeah. But you know, the funny thing is like whenever his friends would try to get me to do some of that stuff,
yeah,
he wasn't having it.
Oh, all right. So protected you from it too.
Very much so.
Wow.
Very much so. It's, I don't know. Never did he ever try to get me to do that stuff.
Just because you get into it doesn't mean you think it's positive, right?
Exactly. And I think he was, there's some issues there that I think he was working through, and that's what he was using to cope with it.
So what was the process of jamming in the basement to get in like stretch formed?
So I went off to school. I went to a military college, which you and I have talked about. And so the other guys had started a band. Some of them were in college. Some of them were just working. And I mean, we were all like, you know, hardcore kids, man. And bands were coming through. I mean, Stretch Armstrong's first real show was with NOFX and Lagwagon on that sold out tour. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Bad. And then like Pennywise would come through with Bad Religion and then they would get them to open. Sick of It All, Strife would come through, they would get them to open.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when I got home from college, they had asked me to join. They needed a bass player because the bass player wanted to move to just doing vocals. And then the singer, Matt, you know, he was getting married and he didn't want to do the traveling thing. And the band was just a hobby. And we were like, well, we want to do more than a hobby. We think we could go to New Jersey and play the Manville Elks Lodge. So, and that's what we did, man. And so that's just where it started. And then, you know, we were like, well, we can go here for the weekend or we can go you know, do all this stuff. That's where it all started, man. Let's just go, let's go play these places. These people responded. I tell you what, Jamie Josta. So Scott went to, I think it was like the New Bedford Festival, like when they were doing those festivals in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, dude.
Scott went up there. He got a flyer from Jamie Josta. And I remember the phone number, and I remember the phone number in my head, and I won't say it because I think it's still his dad's phone number. I'm serious.
Yeah. All my flyers were my mom's number.
I remember. Yeah. And we would call your mom and try to get directions. Benny, are you there? Yeah. So Jamie Josta had a flyer that Scott brought back with him. And it was like, if you want to play New England, give me a call.
Oh, shit.
So we called him. This was our first trip to New England. I didn't know you could get from South Carolina to New York in a 12-hour drive. I just had no concept of what that was like.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
So our first three shows, we played in Columbia, South Carolina. We drove to Providence, Rhode Island to play The Living Room.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was with Split Lip, Texas Is a Reason. Samuel and like Colossus of the Fall.
I remember the tour. I saw it in New Jersey. Yeah. So we, Handy Street.
Yep. So we played at The Living Room. The next show we played in Worcester, Massachusetts with Zach from Bane's band, Barrett.
The
next show was in Connecticut with Hatebreed. There was one microphone for five bands. And Jamie said, don't break the microphone.
Don't break the mic.
I was like, dude, I will promise I'll do my best not to break this microphone. It was a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah, sometimes it just happens.
Yo, but I'm saying that was a phone call. And he set all that up. I mean, and I will always love those dudes. I know they've gone through lineup changes, but I love them. Jamie and Chris Beattie, just from way back. I mean, he was a teenager then. You know, when that all started, he was still, I mean, he's a little bit older than you,
but like a hustler. He was like a hustler from the start.
Hustler,
right?
Like,
always had something going, right?
Yeah. I remember, I think it's okay to tell this story. So we would stay at his dad's place and they had a swimming pool in the backyard. And so like we would hop, that was like a shower, right? We'd get in there and like, you know, rinse it, not soap up, but just get in the pool, cool off, whatever.
Sure.
So we would stay downstairs. And I'll never forget, and I'm not going to say the name of the band, but we stayed downstairs. There was a metal band that stayed upstairs.
Okay.
And I remember walking into the house and there were all these like Reebok white high tops that were like outside because we didn't want to wear the shoes into the house. You know?
Yeah.
So we saw all these Reebok like white high tops and they dudes like all black, long hair. And then I remember them saying, yo, are you guys Strife? And we're like... But I think that was like the one hardcore band. Maybe they knew, you know?
Right. But these guys look straight edge. Yeah,
that must be Strife. But I know. And then Jamie's dad would make us bread. They had like a bread maker.
Ooh.
But that was a big deal, man. Something to eat.
Dude, a swimming pool
and
like
a place to
hot,
sleep.
Fresh bread.
Yes, dude.
In the 90s, yeah, that was like the Ritz.
He didn't know us from Adam, but we just were like, yo, we want shows. And then like he let us stay. But that, as you know, that was like how it worked with bands. And so then when bands would come through and, you know, they would stay at our house.
Yeah, and I'm sure you sorted them out in Columbia, right? Like,
absolutely, man. Show at New Brooklyn Tavern.
Yeah.
Back to our house for Punk Rock Pasta. Everybody spread out, you know, stay at, and that was me and Scott and, you know, another guy.
Yeah, you guys
there.
Had the whole crew down there. That was very welcoming. Yeah.
Actually, absolutely, man. Yeah. That's just how it was. It's like you trade out shows, you stay at people's places. Like that's how we did for a long time, man. I mean, I remember when we transitioned from staying at people's houses to like one hotel room.
Right. Big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal. And I even remember when we would get we would go two hotel rooms. That was the peak.
Stretch Armstrong with two hotel rooms.
The dudes who wanted to party and then like the two of us that didn't want to party.
Yeah.
But that, I feel like that leap to the two hotel rooms is like, it's almost like the leap from a van to a bus. Like
for us, for sure.
I mean,
once you're going two hotel rooms, you should actually start considering a bus. Because that's when it actually starts to like make more sense if you're spending X amount of dollars on staying every night and you can sleep on a bus, that's when the money starts kind of justifying itself.
Yeah. And that was such a foreign concept because this would have been before like any sort of guarantee or anything. But no, I mean, for sure. Like we never toured in a bus. I think there was one or two tours where we considered it and then we were like, what are we doing? We can't. Like I was married. I had a kid. One of the other guys was married, but nobody else was at that time. So it was like, no, we'll do it this way. Van and trailer, one hotel room, two hotel rooms occasionally. But I remember we did a Pennywise tour and one of the Pennywise guys says, you know, the guys in the van want to be in the bus. The guys in the bus want to be in two buses. And the guys in two buses want to fly to the shows and stay in hotels. It's very true. And it was very wise.
And now I'm sure you're dealing with like 100 bus productions. Yeah.
Oh, I see it now. Oh yeah. I see it all the time from these bands that like, you know, the dudes in the band, they don't see each other till they hit the stage. Right.
Yes. That's right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's whatever it takes to get on the stage and do the show. And that's that I'm sure they spent their time, you know, grinding it out in the early days before my time. But I see it all the time. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Some of them don't.
And I mean, TikTok success. I get it.
The story of Stretch is always interesting to me because it's not like you're like, all right, I'm 18. I'm out of school. Like, we're going for it. It was almost like you all sort of set up the basis for your life and then left.
Exactly. Like
you guys went to school. You got married. You started doing the thing. And then we're like, let's go. Do you think
a lot of bad decisions?
In hindsight, how much did that? I know you might not have had the opportunity to do Stretch prior to that, but do you think that pulled Stretch back at all? Like when you were trying to go full force?
Yeah, I think so. Right. Cause like early on, we were all working. I mean, I was teaching, David was teaching, the other guys had jobs. So we'd like, you know, fly to California for a long weekend. We'd fly to Puerto Rico for a long weekend. We would travel and go play the Midwest for a long weekend. So for a long time, people thought we were a full-time band when we were just like weekend warriors.
Right.
And I remember we got offered the Honda Civic Tour in 2003. Chad Gilbert from Newfound Glory.
Right.
Called me, offered us the tour, and it was Newfound and Good Charlotte. And then MXPX and Less Than Jake were alternating. It was like a month of Less Than Jake, a month of MXPX.
So it's like massive cushy tour.
It was the only tour we ever did where you could see the arena from the highway. Yeah. I mean, it was huge. We played Red Rocks, played these arena. I mean, it was big, man. Like it was something we had never done before. Like, you know, we're in a van and trailer. Everybody else was in multiple buses. There's a couple trucks. I mean, it was big, man. 2003. And, you know, we'd pull in, you know, they would dump our trailer and then there was like breakfast, lunch and dinner, all those things that just we had never experienced before. But that was a big deal, you know, and that was a cool experience. So when we got offered that tour in 2003, we were like, you know what? We should give this a go.
Right.
And we did, you know.
And that's when you all decided to stop teaching. And,
yeah,
and
we stopped working and did the band full time for 2003, probably for the next 7-8 years, I think.
Oh, wow. I didn't
7 years. Yeah. You know what, man? Hold on. 2006. That's probably not right. It was probably like 5 or 6 years. Yeah, that's right.
Now, I found an old punk news interview with you, you know, where, you know, the question was, it's almost surreal. You think you've been at this for 10 years, a decade now.
Yeah.
Your answer was, I don't know if it's surreal or just kind of like a nightmare is the best word for it. I've been doing this a long time. We've been doing this level intensity.
That's
so,
funny.
I mean, it seems like there was always kind of like a pushback, like it was always a little tough for you guys when you went full on. Like, did you kind of find that maybe once you got out there, it wasn't exactly like the life you wanted, even though the band was doing great?
Yeah. And the band wasn't doing great. It was like, you know, when you're hitting those weekends and you come back to a full-time job, well, that's fun. That's cool. I'm kind of tired on Monday, but, you know, I get my paycheck, you know, twice a month and I got my insurance and paying my mortgage payment on time. And this is fun. And then when you stop doing that and you go full-time, like, you know, for every Honda Civic tour, there's a Tuesday night in, you know, Little Rock, Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
There's a Monday night in Oklahoma City.
Sure.
Not taking nothing away from those towns, but for a band like us, you know,
tough rock towns.
Tough, yeah, you know. And then so for us, like, you know, we would hit, and we had, I mean, we definitely had some good spots. Like there were some cities that were really, really good for us. But when I say really, really good, like 500 people, 600 right. people, California was like better and bigger. You know, the East Coast was always pretty strong for us, but you know, man, so for me being married with a baby, my situation was different than the other guys, right?
Right.
Because they came home and they had a, you know, for those times, a pretty good chunk of cash in their pocket. But I was coming home and going right back to some crummy job. Mm. And I'll never, this is funny, as sad as it is. I was working at the world famous New Brooklyn Tavern, right? So when I would come home, I would work there, work the door, or I would deliver food for Moe's Burritos when that was like a new concept.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm taking the trash out to the dumpster. There's this dude who's completely obliterated. He's like, "Yo, Chris, is that you?" I'm like, "Yeah, man. What's up? You okay?" He goes, "Dude, Stretch Armstrong, man. Just totally living your dream." I'm like, "Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What a dream it is."
Fucking dick.
But he was like being totally complimentary. Like, "Here I am at New Brooklyn Tavern by the dumpster, and here's Chris from Stretch Armstrong." I'm like, "Dude."
Yeah.
Oh, my. But, you know.
So was that a real, like, was that kind of a, one of those you would think is an innocuous sort of moment in your life that turned out to be a really serious one in a way?
Well, yeah. And then, like, you know, other dudes in the band start quitting because they're trying to move on with their lives, or their relationships, you know, are changing. And so me, David, and John, you know, we stayed through. And I don't say that, I'm not disparaging anyone, because everyone had to make decisions that were best for themselves. And I think we made decisions that were ultimately to our detriment in a way, because it was like, well, if we get this tour, that'll change. Mm. Once we record that album, then this is definitely going to pop off. And we've been at this for this long. We can't quit now. And, you know, man, it's just like a, you know, it's hard to get out of that, that cycle of thinking and touring. And our mindset was like, tour, 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 don't stay home, go back to Europe, go to Japan, go back, get a support tour. Well, the support money's not that great, so that means we got a headline even longer on our own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you, I mean,
you put yourself into the machine.
Like, yeah. And I mean, okay. So then you look at that, you know, with the band, you know, you were in, I mean, you were in a big band, and it's all relative, right? Like the cycle for a big band, small band, there's a lot of nuances that are very similar.
Yeah.
And so for us, van and trailer grinding it out, it just wasn't working, man. You know, just less people coming to the shows. And then it's like, what are you doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it felt like increasingly more like a young man's game.
Oh, and, it is.
and we're just not, you know, young woman's game, young man's game. And we just were not.
Yeah. And peeling your ass out of a van at a certain age when there's people waiting for you at home starts to feel a little different. Yeah.
It feels a lot different. And so by this time my boy was born, and we were on like the Warped Tour. And we got like 3 or 4 weeks of the Warped Tour, and
that'll put any band that'll close any group.
Yeah, even like seasoned vets, you know, and bands. I mean, I guess we were seasoned at that point, but
sure.
We were van and trailering it, and making a little bit of money.
Yeah,
and I was just like, "Yo, man, this is," you know. And then the writing's on the wall, but you never want to see it, right? Or you don't want to think that like it's not working, but all the signs are just glaring that it's not working.
Yeah.
And so eventually we're just like, okay, we got it. Let's pull this down as gracefully as we can. Mm-hmm. And I remember the last, it's probably about a year and a half, we toured to get ourselves out of debt. We paid back everybody we owed money to.
Oh, wow.
When I say everybody, we paid every, maybe I'm forgetting someone, but I don't think so. We paid back everybody we owed money to.
And was merch, that
label, EVR, other local t-shirt, screen print. We paid everybody back.
Was that just like a personal thing? Like we feel like we got to just tie up all these loose ends before we shut it down? Or
I mean, we sang about it and we tried to live that way. And we tried to like be those types of dudes.
Yeah, sure.
And it was like, okay, well, we've been ripped off so many times. We know how that feels. Let's not do that to people that have been good to our band or good to us as people. So again, you know, moral decision, business decision, I don't know, man, but we did it. And then, you know, when we finally stopped playing, we were all on good terms. Nobody was like on drugs, strung out, hating each other. It was none of that. You know, it just came to an end, man.
Yeah. Well, let's go a little sunnier, Chris.
Yeah.
I have a weird memory in my head, okay?
Uh-oh. Okay.
Do you know how sometimes you can, like, I have some memories in my head that they're so old and I've either retold a story or seen so many movies and I don't even know if they're real or not anymore, you know? And I have one with you that I know I've retold through the years and I need you to corroborate it one way or the other. Cause for some reason it's like a weird thing in my head.
Okay.
And it's that it might've been the first or second time you came up to New Jersey.
Okay.
Matt had this kind of weird apartment in a, you know, apartment complex in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Yep.
And we were hanging out after the show.
Yep.
And you were in the bathroom, I believe, with Dave.
Okay.
And I vaguely remember you two showering together to save water.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's the thing. So you guys did.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, okay. you remember, like, it just seemed like getting naked was funny when you're in your 20s,
yeah,
you know, and like try.
Sure.
And yeah, so we would do that. It's like, let's get in there and save water and like, it'll be funny and we'll make people laugh. And
okay,
that was it. Yeah.
Oh, that definitely so happened. Glad that's
we
true.
Did that a lot of places, man.
Okay. I'm
I don't
glad
know what
it's
that
true.
Was all about. Yeah, it was true.
And that kind of leads into something else. So one of the things I don't know why this memory sticks out to me is like, I guess I'd already had a conversation with you at the time and I knew you had gone to like a military college.
I did.
And I noticed like, you know, I'm like 16, so I'm taking this all in probably all the wrong ways. And you two were in the bathroom and I'm like, well, that's interesting. Never seen that.
Sure.
And then I look at your duffel bag or like whatever bag you had with you.
Yeah, a blue duffel bag.
And I noticed that like a towel and clothes were kind of like folded.
Yeah.
In a very meticulous way.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is an interesting person.
That's
me. I'm like to have sort of the looseness to be doing what you're doing and kind of having enough of a subversive mentality to do that.
Yeah.
But also having this really like buttoned up, like part of your nature to keep it meticulous and keep it kind of neat and stuff like that. I just always found it really interesting.
Yeah. It drives my wife crazy all these years later too. Like I don't leave the house without making my bed and cleaning my place up before I leave. Like if we go on vacation, I wash all the bed sheets, I clean the floors, I vacuum the rugs, I wipe everything down.
Huh?
Oh yeah. Without
and you
a
just
doubt.
Have to. You have to.
Oh, how could you leave without it? Yeah.
What happens if you do leave without it?
I don't.
You don't.
No, it'll just bother me the whole way.
Wow.
Yeah. So and my wife is a clean, well put together, thoughtful person. But I'm like, hey, your shoes are still on the step. She's like, yeah, I know. I put them there. I'm like, well, I'll just put them up for you. She's like, no, leave them there. No, it's fine. I'll put them up for you. No problem. Yeah, I'm driving my people. Yeah, if you interviewed my wife, my boy, and my daughter, for all the great qualities I have, they would probably name those those obsessive compulsive qualities that I also possess.
Hmm.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, do you think that same nature is part of like... I mean, you've been very successful in everything you've done. I mean, do you think it's like, you know, part of your nature? Well, do you have a very kind of internally driven sort of thing like that?
Yeah. And sometimes I wish it was like for more productive things, right? So you said right. I've been successful and I appreciate that. And that's nice, you know, moderately so in a lot of things. But like, I wish my little nuances and peculiarities would do different things versus just like having a really clean, like wood, you know, floor at the house or like the kitchen is spotless or my yard's put together. Like I'm sure there's better things I could be putting my time into, but that's just like the way we were raised, man. I mean, my mom was real strict and like, you know, just the house was cleaned up and the kitchen. And so I still carry that with me now. Like, I mean, just putting stuff away, washing dishes. I drive the kids crazy. Cause like, you know, I mean, they're grown now, but when they were little, like, you know, going behind them, putting stuff away, I'm like, what am I doing?
Right.
I'm losing my mind. I'm making them crazy. So, but I can't help it, man. You know, we are the way we are. Right. If you, yeah. And then, yeah, you know, I don't know, man. I think there's probably more meaningful things I could be focusing on and putting my time into. And that's something that that's like always on my list of things to do, like doing something that advances someone else or helps improve someone else's station more so than my own. So I do, there are some things that I do, you know, that aren't just about me and cleaning, you know, and I'm probably focusing on that too much. But yeah, in general, I think it's something that drives me for sure.
Well, it sounds like your family or your kids have grown up in a very clean house.
They have, without a doubt. And it's probably driven them crazy.
So, I mean, another part of that nature with you is like, you know, so much of, you know, the progressive stuff that comes in the hardcore and punk scene over the years is always, you know, from the old guard and the tougher side of hardcore, it's always deemed like whiny and like, you know, we like it the old way. And, you know, coming from your background, I always thought it was fascinating because I can imagine, you know, growing up where you did, going to school where you did, you're around a lot of like machismo, you know, you're around like military guys and like a lot of this, you know, very, very different lifestyle stuff than what's presented in hardcore and punk a lot of the time. So,
sure.
You know, when you're coming out of that, did you like when you're hearing some of that stuff, are you more coming from the place like, oh, wow, this is kind of whiny? Or is it like that shit is so macho that like, I guess the question I'm asking is like, where, how did you reconcile the two things while you were like sort of actively going through it at the same time? Cause I know it had to be so different.
Yeah. You talking about like the whining, like complaining about what's going on in the world or what's going on in punk kind of thing, or what, like,
yeah. I mean, I'll even say it to take you off the shelf a little bit. Cause mm-hmm. I've even found it in my life where, like, you know, even though I grew up punk and hardcore, I grew up, you know, super liberal, very progressive with my politics and the way sure. I feel. I grew up working class, you know, and yeah. I've had to work like really hard.
I know.
To get fucking everything I've ever wanted.
Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but a large portion of the people I've shared this scene with floating by on parents' paychecks. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
like kind of complaining about shit that like you don't even fucking get it. Like, don't, you're not, you know, don't complain. And well, I've even had to reconcile with it, and I haven't had any sense of like military or, you know, Southern upbringing. Yeah. So that's where I kind of wonder about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that makes, so yeah. I mean, like there were some like really popular bands from your state in particular. Mm-hmm. And I remember as much as the kids loved them, they also hated them because there was this rumor or true story or whatever that like the parents were like bankrolling the band's, you know, mm-hmm. van and trailer and their gear and all that. Like,
yeah.
whatever.
Okay. They like discredited them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, yeah, exactly. So the whining part, like that, in a weird way, that always bothered me. Like, you like the band, but yet you question the things they have because of something you heard.
Right.
But you love the band. Everyone's singing along. So what's so bad about them having a nice van and trailer? Because, like, right, when right. you were coming up, when I was coming up, like, a van and trailer was a big deal, and you would see the bands yeah. with the nice. So the whining part always bothered me because I was like, well, do it yourself or work yeah. hard to get it done yourself. But if someone's getting, yeah, I don't know, man. I remember those conversations early on about this particular band from New Jersey that the kids love, but I think they love to hate them as much as they love to sing along to.
Are we talking about Saves the Day?
One of those bands from New Jersey. Okay. But don't you remember, like, they loved them, but then they love to hate them as well, which I just thought was so strange. Like, why?
Right. You know, not really rooted in reality.
No, or something they heard. And this was all, I guess, at the birth of the internet and all those things that were popping up on the internet. And I don't know. I just remember being so annoyed by that. Like, are you really this upset with the band?
Right.
Is it even true that they're, you know, yeah. I don't know. It
are just, you just I, mad at your own dad?
Are
right
you
now?
Just mad at yeah. your own dad? That's right.
Yeah, basically.
And you're taking it out on the band. But I remember getting mad at those kids too, just being like, yo, what? Really? Yeah. Like, come on. Like, but because we were dealing with, like you said, just working class and having to do it on your own, we had to, like, how do you have time to be mad at another band?
Mm.
Like, do you have that much free time on your hands?
I did. I had enough free time when I was younger to feel a certain way. Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, but yeah, at that time you were a straight up teenager though, right? I mean, you were young. Yeah,
yes.
That's right.
Yes, I was.
So by that time we were traveling, touring a little bit. And I don't know. I don't think I really answered your question, but it's funny you say that because I remember getting angry at the whining and the complainers.
Yeah.
Like, what are you complaining? Then figure it out and do something to make it better for you. Or I don't know.
Were you ever at a show, you know, like a local show where a couple like hardcore kids or punk kids were like trying to act tough or fight each other or something? And you kind of in your head, you were like, I just hung out with like 20 people who could just kill all of you in like a second. You know, like, was there this idea that the world you came from was like a little like tougher or knew something that these kids didn't know?
Yeah. And I'm always like, yo, we're in Columbia, South Carolina, dude. Just relax. Like, what are you guys so upset about? Like, just stop. Just you go over here. Like, we always really, I mean, we really did try to like stop people from fighting and all that stupid stuff. And we're like, yo, man, just relax. You're in South Carolina, dude. Relax.
All right. Well, speaking of South Carolina, I came up with something for you.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, you're like the king of Columbia. You know, like I said, you and Hootie.
Darius Rucker, yeah.
Yeah, even though I've never met him.
It's okay. You know,
seems like a nice guy. I'm sure you've met him, right?
I've said hi to him a couple of times. I'm sure he's a great guy.
I'm shocked that you two have never had lunch. I figured.
No, he's big time, man. We've done shows for them, but I mean, you know, he's big time.
Yeah. So I came up with a little quiz for you.
Okay.
A Columbia, South Carolina quiz.
Ooh, all right.
All right. And I feel like I have one, two... I have like 5 or 6 questions. I feel like if you get half of these, I'm going to consider you legit. Okay.
Legit. Yep.
All right. So Columbia quiz question number one, why is it nicknamed the Soda City?
Cola, Columbia.
Boom. 1-for-1. So the nickname comes from an old abbreviation of Columbia to cola, had nothing to do with the people of Columbia drinking or producing soda.
No, we didn't produce any sodas here. Nope. North Carolina got most of that.
Okay. So it's just an abbreviation. Good. Yep. 1-of-1. All right. Okay. I hope this doesn't ruffle any feathers, but it's a good question.
It's all right.
Which Union general entered in 1786 and burnt 2/3 of the city?
Sherman, but it wasn't 1786.
It was not?
No, it would have been later because the Civil War was 1861.
Oh, so
I think you're.
I don't know where I got that date from, but yeah.
Well, that would have been right after the Revolutionary War. Let's see.
Oh yeah, duh.
It was Sherman, William Tecumseh Sherman.
Yeah, it was Tecumseh
Sherman's right. March.
Well, even though I fucked up the date,
it's okay.
That was, and you know, he blamed it apparently. He says that he never ordered the city burnt, but it was very windy. He literally said that. He said it was very windy, and they like lit some cotton bales, and it just like spread around. That story doesn't seem right to me.
It does. No, and that would have been
Sherman.
Like, yeah, he was coming. Sherman. He was coming. That would have been like 1864 or 5 when he was burning the city.
Yeah, I don't know where I got that 86. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. That makes sense. All right, well, you're 2-of-2 anyway.
Let's go.
Now, which unique bug exists in only 6 places in the world, Congaree National Park being one of them?
The cockroach or the tick? Palmetto bug? Cicada?
Okay,
Congaree National Park. I don't know that answer.
So apparently, synchronous fireflies.
Oh, which is the name of the baseball team, the Fireflies.
That's right, the Fireflies, which are fireflies that light up at the same time.
Yes, they do.
Apparently, Congaree National Park is one of 6 places in the world that has synchronous fireflies.
I believe it. That's pretty cool.
These guys? These fireflies that light up?
They're in my backyard too.
Cool is that? Does it just look like a light show, like a rave?
We used to collect them and put them in jars.
I know. I feel bad about that. I used to smear their little butts just to see, like,
I know it.
See the little highlighter. I know. All right. So, I think we just celebrated this today. So it's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not funny. Columbia was famously named after Christopher Columbus.
Yes.
Bit of a problem maybe these days.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll be indigenous peoples.
That's what I celebrated today.
Me too. Me too. But did you know that Columbia won in a highly contested public vote over the name of the city? And it only won 11-7 over what name?
Wow. So it was a vote between Columbia or...
Yeah, and you just squeaked this other one out. And it's kind of... The hint I'll give you is that it's sort of ironic, considering.
Like Whiteville or something?
Washington.
Washington. Oh,
it was almost Washington, South Carolina.
Was it really?
Yeah. It only lost by 3 votes.
I had no idea.
Good. I'm glad I got to drop some knowledge on you here.
Jeez, I'm 2-for-4. Keep going.
All right. In what year was the University of South Carolina founded?
I should know this. 817. Dang it. I've seen it on my daughter's. I pay the bill.
Your daughter's a Gamecock.
She is a Gamecock.
Oh, nice.
Oh, geez. 1792.
It's so close. And you're probably like, I bet somebody 18, opened part of the school in that time.
1802, 1801.
Oh, yeah, there it is. 1801. You got it. Yeah, that okay. One's good.
I knew I'd seen it like on a folder or a bill or something like that.
So we're going to leave it here, 3/5, because the last question had something to do about the Columbia Marionette Theater being the only freestanding theater in the nation devoted entirely to marionette arts. But I wasn't going to stump you on a marionette question.
You want to hear something?
Just not fair.
So guess where my wife used to take her kids on a field trip when they could do field trips?
Oh, go on. The Columbia Marionette Theater?
The Marionette Theater. I've been there as a chaperone.
You've been?
I have been, yes.
Oh, I love that.
And those things are scary to me, too.
Are they?
Yeah, I think they're creepy. Real creepy.
Just walking around on the strings? Did you have a bad experience with...
No, but I just have always thought they were scary. And like her first grade class, they would go there and they got a behind the scenes tour and they got a show. And I was a chaperone one or two times and I've been to that theater.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you pass.
Yay.
And I bet, honestly, I don't think Darius Rucker would have gotten 3 out of 5.
No. He couldn't have got all those answers.
No way.
So
I'm going to continue my quest to make you the mayor of Columbia. What would happen if someone really approached you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone in the city.
Yep.
It's like, Chris, you know, you're a standing member of this community. We want to put the weight of this behind you. Run for mayor. Would you do it?
No.
Never?
No. Can you imagine that?
Yes.
That just seems like it'd be terrible. I don't know why people would go into politics. I just don't understand it. I don't have that drive, that desire, but just seems like it would be terrible.
The state house would be so clean.
It would be clean. It actually be very clean. Well put together. It is though, actually. Yeah, that place is awesome. The lawn, everything. That place is immaculate.
Do you do the lawn at your house? You a lawn man?
Well, my boy is now taking it over, but yeah, we do it together. He does a great job. He does a very good job.
Oh, I hope to make that happen one day.
Yeah. Well, you guys were going to come down when Matt was still living here, mm-hmm. and we had some big plans, and then you know it didn't happen. So maybe we can put that on the docket for next time.
The boys back up, boys. Back up in Jersey. Speaking of Matt, of course, I had to hit up Matt before we got on the horn here.
Okay.
Just to be like, you know, his memory, not always the best.
Not
these
great.
Days.
Not
but
great.
I was like, listen, you got to give me something about Chris. I'm like, let's get deep here. Like, what are we going to do? You know? So
what did
Matt,
he come up with?
He did have a question for you, which was funny.
Okay.
And I don't know why he thought
That's
of
all
it.
Right. I love
it. He was wondering when you started teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to hide your tattoos and try to play it straight in the schools you were in?
I did. I used to wear long sleeve shirts all the time.
What would have been an actual, like, because you taught not in public school, right?
I taught public school 1 year and then I taught at alternative school for 8 years.
Okay.
No, I was just because I was 21. I was 21, 22 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I'm like, yo, this is how an adult's supposed to be. And they can't. Right. I was a kid, man. And so I was wearing long sleeve shirt. I wore a long sleeve shirt and a tie.
So no one told you you had to do that.
No.
Making sure you were respectable. No,
and I have a friend of mine now who's an administrator at a middle school, and he's fully tatted. And he was a coach for like one of, I think he was a football coach, not the head coach, but a football coach. And now he's an administrator and he's like, yo, this is who I am. I've been at it this long. I'm good at what I do. And this is who I am. And I don't think he flaunts them, but he doesn't try to cover them anymore, which I think is great.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it shouldn't matter. I just read an article or the band Pup shared an article about a teacher in Canada who's a massive Iron Maiden fan.
Nice.
Who's actually being put through a lot of shit right now because of the, you know, Satanistic tendencies of Iron Maiden and her being a fan and blah blah blah.
Dude, who doesn't like Iron Maiden? But I mean, you know, my wife's, this is her 20th year teaching first grade.
Wow.
She's got her nose pierced and she has a couple tattoos, but they're mostly hidden. And there's teachers that are quitting left and right because not only just with COVID and the pandemic, how crazy that was, but like just the most thankless job, you know, and just the hours and just, oh my gosh.
Bureaucracy.
Oh, it's terrible, man. So yeah, people want to give teachers, give me a break, man. You know, there's not enough good teachers that still want to be in the game. There's a lot of good teachers, but we don't need to give them any obstacles or any hurdles to deter them from staying in the profession.
Yeah.
Certainly not a tattoo or a piercing, you know?
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. What a fucking tough job it is to be.
Oh man. I just see her grind to public school, man. She's been at it 20 years, dude. And it's just gotten harder and harder. And she's noticed a real change since the pandemic, you know, because this will be essentially 2 years. So her first graders, you know, so all of kindergarten, they were virtual.
Right.
And then a lot of her first graders did partial virtual. So she, like, on the playground or, like, you know, doing certain, like, they just, it's just a different skill set that, you know, from being at home and not being socialized. Like, it's definitely been a change, man.
So she's really visibly noticing, like, kids being a little more, what, like socially inept?
Yes. Wow. Like playing on the playground together, climbing a slide,
right?
Working independently in the classroom, pairing up with a buddy, just like, you know, I mean, they're little, it's not their fault. It's just how they've been having to try to live during this whole thing and how different families have adapted. But she's seeing a real change in, you know, how the kids are in the classroom.
It's fascinating. I wonder.
It's wild, man.
What's your thoughts? Do you think this is something that will, like, you know, as far as that stuff goes, will it rebound back to zero, or do you think it's like permanently altered?
I don't know, man. We go in cycles, right? So permanent. I don't know if it's permanently altered. I think just like we've seen how social media has changed our behavior and the way we interact with people and how it's, you know, you see something enough and you start to believe that's real or that everybody's like this or everybody's doing it. Right. I'm sure there are some changes. I don't think we're permanently, I don't think that it's, we can't come back from it and get back to kids interacting normally again. I don't think that. I think it comes back around.
Good. I hope so. Any indication, my boy just started kindergarten.
Nice.
And he is social butterfly.
That's, well, look at his daddy.
I guess. Yeah. I guess the kid's going to have the gift. As I tell my wife, I'm like, listen, he's handsome because of you.
Yep.
And he's going to learn how to spit from me. You know what I'm saying? Kid's going to have a rap and he's going to have your looks. I'm like, this is dangerous, you know?
But yeah. It's like my kids. They got my wife's brains and they got my quick wit. It's
great. There you go.
The total package, man.
So, speaking of the modern times now, tell me about Furnace Fest. You're back. How was the show? How has everything been?
Like, it was dope. Like, it was dope. Yeah. And I full confession, I didn't want to do it.
You didn't? And you were pushed into it?
No desire.
So who was really
the other dudes
you to
wanted
do
to
it?
Do it? Scott really wanted to do it. Okay. And John and Dave, John and Jeremy really wanted to do it. And David was like, yo, if you want to do it, I'll do it. I said, well, cool. If you want to do it, I'll do it. Right. No, and no hard feelings. Like, I just, it was a part of my life. I was just done with, didn't care anything about it. I'm so glad I did it.
Aw.
Had a great time.
That's awesome.
Hanging out with those guys again was just great. You know, 'cause Scott would fly down, stay the weekend at my house. We would practice. We would all eat. He would fly home.
Scott, New Jersey native, no?
Not a New Jersey native, a New Jersey transplant.
Yes. Transplant, yes. That's right, that's right.
But he's been there a long time now, man.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And it was kind of sad. He came down, he did all the traveling for this thing.
Right.
He put in a lot of work. The Thursday night before Furnace Fest, we had our last practice. And as we were packing up, someone said, man, this is kind of a bummer. This will be the last time we have a reason to get together and do this until we do this again.
Right.
But you just take it for granted when you're living together, you're touring together, you get on each other's nerves. But like, this was just because we hadn't played a show in like, I think it was 11 years.
Wow. So does that also mean it was the first time you had all been in a room together in 11 years as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And so it was such a nice time. So going to Birmingham, like Scott's wife and kids were there. David's wife and kids were there. Uh-huh. Jeremy's wife was there. My wife and kids were there. My niece came. We had family.
Fuck
and
yeah.
There was just no pressure. It's like, we're not in a band. We're doing this for fun. Like, this is a good time. And the Furnace Fest guys were really, really cool. And it was great, man. And I wasn't sure how it was going to go. But it was really, really cool. We had a really, really good experience. And I was wrong. I'm glad those guys had the foresight to, you know, nudge me along, which was great.
That's so nice to hear. What was the crowd like? Was it like the same old parts, the same old songs that were like the ones that were killing it?
Did something
surprise you that maybe had aged better than you thought or something?
Well, I mean, some of these songs that we played are 20 years old.
Right, yeah.
So I was just surprised that we did spend a lot of time practicing because we said if we were going to do it, we didn't want to sound like garbage. And I'm not saying we're a great sounding band or a great band or whatever.
You guys
are
always super tight live. That was definitely a stretch thing for sure.
Thank you. And so we just wanted to sound good as we can sound, which ain't that great, but we wanted to sound good. And we played like Glassjaw Close. We were right before Glassjaw. Beloved was right in front of us. It was great, man. I was surprised at the crowd just went off. It was great, man. Like,
fuck yeah.
I knew it was going to be good, and I don't say that arrogantly, but that was a place like we always did well there. I think we were one of only a handful of bands that played that festival all three times, you know, in the early 2000s.
Right.
So we played second to last. Taking Back Sunday closed the whole thing.
Okay.
We played just before Glassjaw, and then I think Taking Back Sunday played directly after Glassjaw on a bigger stage outside. It was dope. I mean, like, kids were going nuts. I say kids, adults were going
right.
nuts, man. And I just was surprised that so many people traveled so far, just said some really nice things. And, like, it just wasn't lost on me. Like, I'm not, like, a real emotional guy or whatever, but it was very cool. It was nice to be remembered. It was nice to have people that stoked. And there was a lot of great bands there. It certainly wasn't just us, but for our 45 minutes, you know, and we'd gotten ready for it, man. Like, some of the dudes had gone back to the gym. Some of the dudes were real serious about, you know, getting back in shape. I mean, David's, he's been in shape. He's an animal.
Yeah. He's always jacked.
Yeah. He's jacked. He's working on a half Ironman too.
Really?
Oh yeah, he's an animal.
Big guy, Steve.
Yeah, he's great. But it was good, man. It was really, really good. We prepared like physically, and we prepared as a band, you know, like rehearsing.
Yeah.
It was killer, man. It was great.
Did you have any were you up there singing and there was people not our age that were into stretch? Like,
yeah, there were some young folks that were there with their parents, which was dope.
Fuck yeah.
And my daughter is 20. And so she had seen us when she was a little girl.
Yeah. And your son probably never even remembered seeing
us. Never.
Stretch, right?
No, he was too young. He never saw
it.
So my daughter was going, you know, she was stage diving and going.
Oh, really? She took a dive?
Like three back
no
to
way.
Back.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
She was going off, and so
how is her form? Like, how would you rate it?
You know what? It was
solid?
Really good. Yeah, she came, pushed off.
She
the
goes
monitor.
straight forward.
No, she turned around. She knew how to land. Like, it was great. And then my brother and another dude were making sure she got out. You know, before she got crushed.
right.
So I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah. So it was good. I'll send you a little video. It was good.
next step is head walking, dude. Be careful.
Yeah, that'll be the next show.
well, it's really nice to hear it.
It was really nice.
I was wondering, like, you know, after, you know, you've been grinding through normal dad work life for like a decade now.
Yeah,
like,
a long time.
You know, and I've seen a lot of people I know personally that were hardcore kids, were punks, you know, who kind of slipped into middle age and really lost their sense of that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like the ethics, the values behind it, the things mm-hmm. that really like drove us. Mm-hmm. Like when you were just doing this standard dad work life for a decade, like, did it take any discipline on your end to keep kind of the spirit alive in that way?
Yeah, maybe. You know, it definitely didn't feel like something I had to work at, because I think it's just in us, right? And is maybe that sounds goofy, but like, I still feel like a straight edge hardcore kid, which is seems so stupid. Yeah. I turned 48 like a week and a half ago.
I hear you.
I mean, you know,
I still feel like a chubby stone Stretch Armstrong fan.
I know. You know? And then like you grew to be like 6'3" and all skinny with your beard and everything, or your mustache. But no, I like, you know, I still feel that way, man. I mean, you know, my knees hurt and like, I don't get up off the floor as fast as I used to, I still feel like that same stupid kid, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's not, I'm not putting on an act. I'm not trying to be anything that I'm not. I just still, so 7 Seconds re-released that Crew album.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a good buddy of mine bought me the new album. So it's like a gatefold. It's got like a booklet. It's got all these, like all these people saying things about 7 Seconds and all that. Well, I've got the album I bought in 1983 when I was 12. So I've got the original and then I've got the new one. And I don't let anybody touch it. I don't want anybody going near it. Like I pull the booklet out and like I read the booklet and then I haven't even played the album because I don't want to put it on the turntable. I went to Spotify to listen to the album with the new recording because I didn't, but I mean, my records are still very important. It's so silly, but it's like, and I'm not doing that for any other reason other than that's who we are, man.
Yeah. Just makes you feel good. Can't take the kid out of it.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Okay.
I mean, listen, fuck it, man. Like the types of driving forces that men our age find to fuel themselves through this is often awful, I think. You know what I mean?
Maybe so.
If someone tells me that, you know, they're at their own homes obsessing over a great sounding album instead of buying a fucking boat.
I have a boat too.
Well, but you didn't buy it for that reason.
That's right.
You know, but I don't know. I moved out to the fucking suburbs a year ago and I'm like,
sell out.
I'm astonished, honestly, by the things people spend their time and money on in middle age. Makes no fucking sense to me. It's weird.
Me either.
Wasteful.
Yeah.
And I don't really get it and connect with it. So I much more empathize with you.
But then again, did you ever think, and we've shared these photos and videos before, like, I mean, did you ever think you'd be scrambling eggs and making avocados and pancakes for two humans that you helped create and you were solely responsible for their well-being, dietary, mental, safe keeping? I mean, that's just a crazy concept too, right?
Yeah.
So we have grown up but still care about 7 Seconds album. Like it's
that's
crazy.
Right. It's the best. Nuts. We're the best.
We're the best.
We're the best.
We are the best.
Yeah. Oh.
No doubt, man. It's great though. And it's not lost on me. I got a lot of really good friends and like on the weekend, they can't wait to go see the Gamecocks play football.
Sure.
And they go to a big barbecue and then they tailgate and I could care less about any of that. Doesn't make it wrong.
No.
But that's just where that's what they like to do. And this is different what we like to do, you know?
My wife, we just had someone a couple weeks ago. We were making Sunday plans and, one of the other, you know, couples involved in these plans. The wife wrote to my wife saying basically like, oh, well, that's football Sunday. So I got to see like if he can come or not.
Oh,
and
she
was just like, yo, thank you for like not being that or me not having to deal with that.
Well, and see,
no problem. I like football, but like the idea of pissing away an entire Sunday.
Oh yeah, and see, you know, down here it's Saturday, right? Because SEC, Gamecock, it's big football. I mean, it's
Saturday
big.
Day,
it's big, man. Yeah, and you're what, Giants fan? Are you still a Giants fan? Or is that Matt?
I'm a big Giants fan, but I mean, it's really easy to not care too much about.
Yeah,
them,
right? I know.
They're making it real easy to not care that much.
You
don't want to invest too much in it. I get it.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, I got over that a long time ago. You know, I'm a Nets season ticket holder. I'm a big sports fan, but like,
I know, like big
basketball
guy, right?
The last thing I'll ever let sports do to me is make me mad. You know, I truly value this as entertainment. And if it is no longer entertainment to me, I no longer want anything to do with it. Like,
okay, so going back to, didn't you have like a little stint with Dan Patrick, or you were on the show or like something, right?
Dan Patrick. We have had some weird ties into like sports.
Because he would play Gaslight Anthem stuff.
He
on
played
his show.
Gaslight, yeah. And
but then you had something sports related, didn't you? Or am I making that up?
Well, I have a podcast about sports.
I know, but why am I thinking Dan Patrick? Maybe I'm just thinking.
I heard the Gaslight Anthem on Dan Patrick,
but maybe that's what it is.
You did hear. Well, the guy who's one of the producers at Dan Patrick's show is a guy named Seton, who is cousins with the Hasselbrinks of South Amboy, who are some very classic hardcore metal Central Jersey dudes that I know very well.
Yeah.
So once we made that connection, I think he's warm to the cause.
Maybe that's what it is. Cause yeah, they would have that hate breed stat of the day.
It's totally that dude. And Seton. He's like an old Jersey hardcore kid.
That's so cool, man. Yeah. Cause we listen to that at work. Sometimes my boss will put it on and he'll do like Bad Religion and then he'll do that stat of the day. And then that's where I heard you guys. Okay. That's what it was.
I think the coolest thing for me is that, the New Jersey Devils play a Gaslight song when they score a goal.
Do they really?
Yeah, so we're the goal song, which is
that's
amazing.
Pretty dope. Now is it the same song every time?
It is. Yeah, it's the chorus of the song "Howl."
I had no idea, but I didn't even know until you said "score a goal." The Devils are a hockey team.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
They are the Diablos.
Thank you. We don't say the Devil's name down here. Diablo.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. My fault. What do you call him instead?
The Bad Man.
The bad man, he who may not be said.
I'm just kidding.
All right, Chris, as much as I could talk to you,
I know,
for
we've been
like
talking
next...
an hour and 22 minutes. Jeez, I'm sorry.
This is going off track, baby. This is how it rolls.
It's dope. And Brad said very little after this thing got started. Is that his role? He's the tech guy.
I think when Brad knows that like one of my buds is on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I just stand out of the way.
He just stays away. I wish he talked more. I do.
Well,
I tell him to all the time. He's a smart guy. He's funny. He doesn't say shit. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's probably the best smart, funny guy, the one that doesn't have to run his mouth all the time.
Well,
like me.
Then maybe don't be a fucking podcast host.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Yeah, I mean, touche. So as I was scrolling through your Instagram, going off track, there's a lot of really good guests on here. Was I just filling a spot from someone else who pulled out last minute or something?
No, I got I'll tell you exactly what it is. Is like, because we talked about this like a year ago, and I was like,
I would comment on the Instagram asking why I could never get on, obviously joking.
And I was kind of concerned, honestly, when I started doing this show about like, oh, I gotta like grow this show. I gotta
get,
or more like no one wants to hear like me and Chris talk about fucking pancakes for like 90 minutes. Like
I've
gotta go get like, and honestly, as time goes on and we do this more, I'm finding that the ones with people I know and have history with like are a lot more fun and a lot more rich.
And well, there's just so much context there, and there's so much just like just shared enthusiasm to talk about. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, I listened to your podcast or y'all's podcast. And as I was going into it, I was like, man, I think it's just the self-deprecating nature that I possess. Like, I was like, man, I hope I just don't sound like a fool the entire time we're talking.
No, definitely not.
And maybe I did. I don't know.
No, and yeah, I don't know. And I've always thought, honestly, in our world, you have a very unique perspective. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody's from where you're from.
That's true.
As a background, and even got into the work you did now, you know, like where you've gotten into the other side of the business.
Sure.
So, don't have imposter syndrome. I have it. I have a show on Friday, my first show in like 18
months. Mercy Union. I saw the post.
And I have so much imposter syndrome, Chris. Like, I'm like, why is my chubby dad body going to pretend to be like a musician right now? Like,
it doesn't. But you're not chubby. You're tall and lean. You used to be chubby when you were a teenager.
I'm very nervous, Chris. I'm not feeling confident.
You're a great drummer. And you get to hide behind the drums all night.
It's true. It's true.
You'll great.
I'll put the hair down. I'll go Cousin It style.
Yeah, you'll do great. Now, your kids are probably too young to come to the show.
This one, yeah. They can't go to like the Crossroads at 11 o'clock at night.
Gotcha. That's too late for me, man. Yo, one of the things with Furnace Fest, when we were talking to Chad about doing it, I said, hey, some of the guys have younger kids, so we want to be in that like 8:30, 8:45 slot. Secretly, that was as much for myself as it was for the kids.
Yeah, you're like, by 10, I'm usually...
Dude.
I got a tea, I'm winding down. Yeah.
Heck yeah. It was for the kids. We always say we've been doing it for the kids, right? Young kids, old kids, all.
Dude, when I left for those tours in 18 and 19, like the Gaslight Mercy Union tours, that was when my kids were like babies. And so jumping from... you know, straight to baby land to like, hey, you get a gig where you start at like 11:30 at night.
Brutal.
Fucking brutal. You know, like it was pretty rough. Man.
Does it really start? Does the gig start that late?
It can. Yeah. I mean, like, like Mercy Union was doing like, you know, Euro fucking squat shows and stuff. You know, those like all of a sudden you're headlining for a fucking soccer match, you know?
Yeah.
Weird shit like that. So
it's too late, man. It's
way
too late.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And I was literally playing those Gaslight shows in 19 with iced coffee on stage. I was sipping through the whole show.
Sip just to stay awake.
That's it.
Get a little caffeine buzz. Well, I wish you well. Is the show this weekend?
Yeah, it's on Friday.
Nice. Well, at least you got. Well, you don't really get a Saturday off with kids your age.
No, of course not. No, but guess who we're playing with? Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos.
So what's that all about?
He's got a group. Apparently, he's a real arty dude. He's had this band for a while, and they're like kind of a '70s New York club rock kind of band. They're good.
That's pretty cool, man.
And my singer Jared, who, you know, has a small record label, had caught wind that they had an album. And literally, he's a giant Sopranos fan and just cold called them being like, hey, I'll put out your record. And they were down with it.
No way.
So, yeah, he's putting out the Zopa record, which is Christopher Moltisanti's album.
Speaking of, I have not heard great reviews about that new movie.
So
I heard it's a must watch, but it's all over the place.
I tried to see it. My wife and I had Italian date night.
Nice.
So I cut practice a little short. I went to the supermarket. I bought a bunch of food. I made some delicious food.
Manicult.
I made homemade garlic bread. I made stuffed portobello mushrooms.
Nice.
I made a fake meat and asparagus pasta with some pesto. Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
And then me and grandma over here go to fucking set it up. We download like Warner, we download HBO Max. We're doing this shit for like 20 minutes and we still can't watch it.
Ugh.
We gave up and we still haven't seen it because we can't figure out how to watch it.
Yeah, but it's coming out in theaters though too, right?
Yeah. We're just going to have to go see it now. Old school. Yeah, because we can't figure it out. We can't sort it.
So like, people are like, you got to watch it, but there's always like a but that follows it. I'm like,
I have low expectations, so I'm not going to be offended.
That's either all right. Way.
You're looking at someone who enjoys Anchorman 2, Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Sure. Okay.
Like, you know.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
It's the same with sports, you know, like just have some fun with it. Just let yourself be entertained and, you know.
It's the best way to roll through it.
I'll sit here and tell you Jar Jar Binks is cool because I just don't give a fuck, you know, like just enjoy your life.
Enjoy your life. That's what I'll do. That's what I'll do. Well, this has been great. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Love you, Chris. Thanks, buddy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When's the last time you moshed at a hardcore show, Brad? Ever?
Oh, at a hardcore show? Yeah, it would have been like, it would have been maybe early 90s.
What year was the last time you staged Dove?
That's a really good question. I'd stage dived in the 90s, like like on tour with other bands and stuff.
Could be your biography. Brad Worrell. I stage dived a little bit
in the
90s.
I wasn't really a big stage diver even as a kid, man. Felt like I don't know. I think it was partly like because, you know, either I was in a band or I wanted to be in a band. And I felt like, I don't know, I separated that from being in the band. It's weird. I don't know how to describe it.
What do you think is a person's main inspiration to stage dive?
It's just like the best expression of that fucking madness that you feel in the pit, like in this just like animal sort of, I don't know. It's been a long time since I really wanted to be in a fucking pit. Like since I was a teenager, like, you know, and it didn't last long. I kind of grew out of hardcore fairly quickly.
Right. Well, I ask because, I mean, you know, when I'm at a show and I'm hearing like hardcore or punk music that's making my blood boil, making the body want to move.
Right.
Like jumping off a stage doesn't feel like a physical expression of that, you know? That's where it's like, I do wonder sometimes, are the stage divers attention getters?
I mean, I think
how many are just looking to be seen?
I think that they think, or that maybe the first stage divers, that it was, you know, it was an expression of trust and we're all in this together.
Right.
I think corrupted quickly and people, you know, lost that. But I think that's what it meant. That's what has to be what it meant originally. It was like, I trust you guys. You're going to catch me.
Who was the first stage dive?
Somebody that wasn't supposed to be on the stage.
This is I
got
love
chased
that
chased off by fucking security.
Oh, look at this. There's actually an answer. I literally went into Google and said, who was the first person to stage dive? And it says Iggy Pop.
I believe that.
Says Iggy Pop is often credited with popularizing stage diving. Initially seen as confrontational and extreme, it's become common at punk and hardcore shows. But you know then, if this says popularizing stage diving, you know there was some old school hardcore stage divers before Iggy Pop, you know? The ones who say, wait, didn't Jim Morrison stage dive in the Doors movie?
Don't give Jim Morrison any credit for anything.
Why? You know, I bet your little fucking ass didn't look as nice as his in leather pants.
Whoa. Really,
yeah.
Benny?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Well, why don't you go ahead and A-B that for
me? You lust after Jim Morrison's fat ass in leather?
Fat? Stop it.
He's like Elvis.
I still make the contention, and I'll go to my grave saying this. If the Doors were not from California and they were from England, nobody would say shit, including you.
Yeah, because they wouldn't have gotten popular. The Brits would have known better and would have fucking beat them off the stage.
They were from California. They were American and acted that way, which somehow doesn't make it legit. But if you're Keith Richards or fucking Robert Plant or Roger Daltrey, are you kidding me? If Roger Daltrey was from Southern California, The Who would be widely mocked. Widely mocked. They could just get away with it with the English thing. Telling
yeah,
you.
Well, that's
there's something. Please write to me and tell me if I don't even want. Actually, you know what? Don't write to me because I know what the fuck you're going to say, and it's all going to be Doors haters telling me you hate Jim Morrison. So don't even bother writing me. Don't even bother. Stay on my feed. Unless you're pro Morrison, I'm pro Morrison.
Okay,
just like I'm pro Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah,
y'all go same, fuck yourselves. You know,
the same person.
Well, anyway, thanks to Chris for coming on with us.
Yeah, that was very sweet of him. And I did really enjoy that.
Entertaining episode. You got some socials for Stretch and Chris?
So I do. They're Stretch Armstrong 803 is the band's Instagram. And Chris's Instagram is Booyah 803, but that's a B-O-O-Y-A-A 803.
803 Columbia, what's up?
And then Chris is on Twitter at Chris McClain 803. So as long as you can remember the 803, you're in the right place.
I got a lot of love for Columbia.
Yeah?
A lot of love. Finlay Park. I've spent a lot of time in that town. It's a good town.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
It is.
Sketchy history. Yeah. But good town.
Considering the history, it's a really good town for sure.
Well, listen. My people were in a shtetl in Russia when that town was fucked up. So, you know, I'll give them a pass. It's not their fault anymore. It's not Chris's fault, you know?
But yeah, thanks, Chris. And, you know, check him out, follow him, follow us at Going Off Track. If you want to become a patron of Going Off Track, go to patreon.com/goingofftrack. We have a Thursday night chat where we do a Discord group chat with everybody.
Been fun.
And hopefully we'll have some more bonus material. We do have a lot of older bonus material up on Patreon. Hopefully getting some more of that going soon. And, you know, leave us a good review on iTunes of any sort. And if you want to just throw us a tip, you can Venmo us at Off Track.
What is that? Why do you always say of any sort? Like, why do you have
like
to,
a regular sort of?
Why are you
real
so
honest? Authentic?
So against the sexually explicit ones? Why?
I guess I shouldn't worry. I just have this like, I thought I have this vision of everybody suddenly taking you seriously, and our iTunes reviews being literally half pornographic.
Yes. I don't understand why my goal is your,
because then somebody,
is your nightmare.
Somebody comes around looking for a great, like, more than music podcast and finds this porno reviews that might just throw them off. Think of the kids,
Brad.
Buddy. Think of the
Brad,
kids.
I am. And you know what the kids need? They need some fun in their GD lives, you know? They need some. Look, you heard Chris. First graders can't even hang out with each other. I'm fucking promoting
sex
connectivity between humans, skin on skin contact. It's very important, Brad. You gotta milk these beasts. I don't know. Get me out of here. It's too late.
We'll see y'all next week. Do what you gotta do.
Bye.